Culture eats strategy for lunch, and informed cultures drive decisions and inspire action. At the Data Culture Podcast, we talk with execs, visionaries, and data experts that you may move from idea to outcome in your own data culture journey. Welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. My name is Sid Atkinson, data culture innovator and consulting leader with over 21 years in data.
And I'm Lee Harper, AI human with over a decade doing AI stuff.
And we are honored today to have Peggy Tsai with us, who's a very tenured thought leader and data expert, AI expert. She is currently Chief Data Officer at Big ID, and we are excited to have her speak with us today. Welcome, Peggy.
Thank you, Sid and Lee, for having me on your podcast today.
Yeah. And Peggy, you gave a presentation just recently in New York that's going to be the focus for this talk. So if you don't mind, give our listeners a quick intro into that presentation, and we've got a question to kick it off, and then we'll talk, then open it up for you to give a little bit back on your background.
Sure. So the title of my talk was Five Things Chief Data Officers Need to Do to Lead an AI-First Organization. And that's really based on a lot of the conversations I've had with C-suite executives, specifically chief data officers, on additional things that they can be thinking about when shifting their data-centric organization to a more AI-focused organization. So some of the things that I cover are common lessons learned that data officers are looking at in terms of scaling out their existing data programs, thinking about data literacy and how that translates to AI literacy, privacy and security, and really some of the common things that data officers should be thinking about, but perhaps need a gentle reminder as well.
And this was a very interesting talk. And this, by the way, just as a quick plug, this is not the only thing that you've spoken about. You have been asked to speak at many different conferences, many different events, many different venues. Peggy, if you don't mind, do a quick introduction on yourself and just all of the awesome data things that you've done.
Sure. So as you mentioned, my day job is the Chief Data Officer of Big ID, which is an AI machine learning data discovery platform. On the side, as some of my side jobs, I am also an adjunct faculty at Carnegie Mellon's Chief Data and AI Officer Program, which is for executives. It's part of their Hines College. And I'm also part of the AI Security Council for Black Hat.
Let me lead with a question on you talk about the five things CDO should know to build the first build an AI-first organization. But let's hit the qualifying question, because I think we can all try to jump too quickly into AI without thinking about the why. So backing up a second, what are your thoughts, and how do I know as the CDO or the CEO, how do I know I should be an AI-first organization? What are some things that you've looked at or counseled folks on?
Sure. So I also like to give some context. A lot of the talks I have given recently on AI is actually referring to generative AI, which is the newest form. And I think that generative AI is a little bit different in the fact that it's you're creating new content based on existing content. And that type of technology, I feel, may not always be appropriate solution for the business problem that organizations are looking to solve. And I heard a great quote recently from one of my friends, Sol Rashidi, who is the former chief data officer of L'Oreal. And she talked about how sometimes organizations use a sledgehammer to hit a nail when a hammer is more appropriate. So the analogy just refers to, again, using the right tool that's appropriate for the solution. And AI and machine learning has been around for decades for many organizations when it comes to doing analytics, predictive analytics, large-scale big data. These types of technologies when it comes to AI, machine learning have been around. So there's nothing new in terms of how organizations are using AI machine learning today to help with their building large models and algorithms. And this, for example, in the insurance space, this type of large scale data has been used around in things of, you know, in your claims business and determining a lot of different scenarios for life insurance, for example. So AI is not new. The fact that organizations are thinking about generative AI and how that helps different business problems, you know, there is ways to look at whether there's a efficiency, cost savings, or is there a productive usefulness that comes out of using things like a ChatGPT to help with content generation, code generation, summarization of data, of content, large amounts of content. And so it really depends on certainly the business use case and application and whether or not these new generative AI tools are applicable and can be applied.
Gosh, it really sounds like you're saying we should start with the business case.
Absolutely. It always starts with a business case. It never starts with technology, Sid. It never starts with technology. I work for a technology vendor, but I've been on both sides. As a practitioner, I worked at large financial services companies as a data practitioner myself. I've been a consumer and used a lot of these data tools. I rolled out a lot of data management programs. And now being on the other side of building a solution for data discovery and data cataloging, I can say that the most successful implementation and adoption and scaling of any program, whether it's a data program, security, privacy program, compliance program, has to have clear business use case, business drivers, executive support, training. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of components that come with it, but really knowing the problem that we're trying to solve and having everyone on that same mission is really, truly important.
One of the teams that Lee and I worked on previously, their catchphrase was problems worth solving, opportunities worth pursuing. It always has to start there.
Yeah.
Love that explanation. It's less of a question of, you know, how do I know whether I should be an AI first organization? Your meta question you put on there is like, are you really clear on what you're pursuing and why you're pursuing it? And then once there's clarity there, then I can cascade down like objectives and key results from like what my mission as an organization is. And starting with what I need to solve either for my customers or if you're a government for my constituents, then I can start to look at like, well, then now how do I apply if my focus is on a better user experience or efficiencies in operations or pursuing new revenue? How might various tools solve that, right? I think, Lee, the one we teach some of our folks about is like we had a client ask for an LLM to help build a forecasting model. It's like, well, no, use a forecasting model to do forecasts. So it's the right tool for the job.
This has, you know, because LLMs, generative AI has captured the imagination, in many ways, it's been AI's crossing the chasm moment, right? Yeah. It's a lot of orgs that previously weren't looking at AI as an option, especially in like the small to medium size kind of segment of the market. Obviously, enterprise, as I say, they've been doing this decades. Because it's had that, people often are jumping first into the tech before the business case because they're just, the fear of missing out, right? A ton of FOMO around us at the time being.
I agree. I mean, I think a lot of the conversations, you know, came from the board of many of companies saying, well, why aren't we using ChatGPT? Why aren't we using Gemini? Why aren't we using these tools? So it came more from FOMO. I completely agree with that, fear of missing out. But really thinking about what this technology offers, what the benefits are, and then applying it to aligning it to the business processes, the way that people work today, where can provide the most efficiencies. Certainly, it's going to increasingly be more of an end-to-end solution, but certainly we see it as a being very useful, especially on the design and ideating, the coding phase, the opportunities where people do spend a lot of time, you know, reviewing and summarizing documents. There's a lot of cost savings and time savings. I can't wait to have utilize that feature where my calendar and action items for meeting notes are all synced up together, and I, you know, have that virtual assistant to really help me, or to do my research. Right, I do a lot of the research for presentations. There's a lot of opportunities there, but I think what we've seen so far is mainly from a more individual employee point of view, and I think that in the next year or so, I'll really see where these technologies help in terms of other business enterprise business processes as well.
So you hinted a little bit at the why this presentation, this advice on the five things the CDO should know to build an AI-first organization. So FOMO being part of that. Before we get into those 5 points and how you outline a framework or a way of thinking for people to address this, what is the genesis of this? Like what had, when you were looking at, out of all the things you could talk about, why did you pick this?
Yeah, no. So there are several things. First, in the U.S., President Biden's executive order and AI Act order, I think really pushed a lot of conversation, especially from the government, on the importance of AI. And we've also seen it from the European Union and their AI Act, pushing for the principles of, you know, accountability, transparency, explainability in AI, and keeping AI safe and not causing harm to humans. I think a lot of those principles have shaped the way that not just the government, but for all tech organizations, and it will be trickled down to all industries, to really think about how they're using automated technologies and AI technologies to replace some of the manual review work that goes on today. So I think that we've seen in the last year, 2023, organizations were doing things like POCs and just scoping out what they could be doing in terms of leveraging these new technologies. And what they realized is that AI is such a cross-functional technology. It's so expansive across sales and marketing, compliance, legal. It's no longer siloed to a technology officer or even the chief information officer. It's not the only only stakeholder executive that is responsible for AI. It's a cross-functional team of the business, from legal, compliance, data, security, privacy. They all have to be equal stakeholders for the identification, prioritization, release, and operationalization of AI. And the reason why I focus on the chief data officer is because I really see this function leading the way in terms of identifying the AI strategy for the organization, being the most collaborative when it comes to working with technology and the business stakeholders and legal compliance teams. That's what they've been doing for the longest time. That's why chief data officers existed in organizations that are regulated, for example. They're the ones that have to deal with regulations, deal with the data, reporting, technology. So I feel personally, and this is validated by the actual identification of this role, a lot of organizations now have a chief data and AI officer. They've decided to roll up the functions into one person. Now, there's also companies that only have an AI officer, chief AI officer, but without good data and having that ownership of data, an AI officer is only going to be also limited. There's limitations to what they can be doing, and it's certainly only from a more technology point of view as well.
I had to laugh yesterday when you shared the presentation, and one of your first points in there is an AI strategy is a data strategy. And we had an inverse of that on a podcast. One of the most recent podcasts is a data strategy is an AI strategy. All right. Now, my bias coming from the more traditional data engineering, data warehousing background, that's the way I put it. Whereas if Lee had recorded that episode, maybe he would have done the same title that you did. But, you know, one coin's two sides, right? At the end, it's still one thing that has to work together well. So from your kind of standpoint, you've started to get into this, but what is that role that the CDO should be taking in creating that AI strategy?
Yeah, so the way that I talk about the first point is I always start with strategy, all right? Where, what is the vision of the utilization of AI technologies? What is the relation of the AI technologies to the data itself that feeds the large language models, the algorithms, the co-pilots, and tying that to the business strategy. And part of my title, but certainly I see AI as a technology encompassing and enveloping around the data, which is data strategy, which is closely tied to the implementation of the business strategy. So business strategy, data strategy, AI strategy. There's interlinks between all three. And traditionally, data strategy is owned by someone who's head of data or chief data officer. They ensure that the data assets that's used that are or can be fully governed and high quality and usage and the right access and controls, that data, the critical data for that organization that's governed, is aligned with what the business needs to run the business, to be compliant, and also to create the products or goods for the company or services. So the chief data officer already has a segmented and governance view on important data. And then the AI is specifically the data that's used to feed the AI models, those AI algorithms, large language models. And of course, there's always a technology component to AI. And again, I'm not advocating all chief data officers also be technologists, but that's why there is a partnership with the technology and information officer teams to make sure that the right architecture in terms of technology is utilized as well. But there is no good AI without good data.
Yes, which is why we love that point that AI strategy is a data strategy. Data strategy is an AI strategy. I think that's a very important takeaway. So you had another beautiful question at the beginning of that. You know, it's like what existing, and you started to hint at this again in the last question. So what existing data foundational capabilities, should people be looking to leverage to support AI initiatives?
Yeah, so what I noticed is that organizations tend to use what they have existing, and it's easier to, I don't advocate for recreating the wheel. There are processes today, especially around model risk management, that organizations may have in place today that is very similar to what they should be doing from a lifecycle manager point of view to manage models. So I've seen this be implemented, and it's helped those companies that have a model risk management process to really accelerate and really adopt that to AI. So one thing is to have their governance council or working groups certainly be renamed to an AI governance council working group. Again, adding additional stakeholders, being able to change the agenda and the prioritization to be AI use cases. So it's a very similar model and framework that can be easily be expanded to AI. The second thing is the way that organizations catalog and inventory their data. They just need to start prioritizing and identifying models inside having an inventory of models that's used. Again, organizations probably have this somewhere if they're already building out models, but specifically AI model, right, that are in production and to manage that. Another important thing that I've seen, this comes directly from the Federal Trade Commission, is mandating not just the inventory models, but know the lineage of the data that goes into the models. And anyone that's been doing data governance knows that lineage to a data set is something that is part of, you know, you do every day in terms of documentation and checking that, you know, you have all those authoritative sources, you have lineage mappings. So this is what, again, the Federal Trade Commission is simply asking for that clear accountability and audibility in terms of what the model is and the data sources, the lineage for that. So these are not rocket science concepts, but applying the basic data governance concepts of lineage, model inventory, data quality, knowing the completeness of the data so that you can be assured of the model output. These are not new concepts, but applying them to AI is groundbreaking for some.
I've observed that a number of people in the AI space come from research backgrounds of varying types where none of that is the case, right?
So I think so. Data management is its own unique practice. And unless you've done data management, have been in this role, or you read the DEMA handbook, the DIMBOK, or you're familiar with data lifecycle management. There was a point in time when I worked with data scientists, and they are the smartest people when it comes to quantitative modeling. But when it comes to the preparing of the data, making sure that the data is, you know, complete, you understand the definitions, you understand the limitations of that data. You know, that type of data management, you want to make sure you're including those people in your preparation work. And it's not something, a specific skill set or class, like a data scientist might have taken when they got their PhD.
You hinted at one of the reasons I think it's been harder to teach, and you hinted at this earlier, is that, you know, management processes are inherently cultural. And it's hard to teach culture, right? Because every company comes in with every organization creates a different culture. And so from my experience, I'm going to both agree and then add a caveat to something you said earlier there. I love and agree with leverage existing processes. Don't recreate the wheel. I would say it's like lineage is probably one of the most forgotten things in like almost every consulting engagement that we've ever done. Absolutely, loads of companies that do it and do it well, but there's probably far more that it is a I wouldn't even say it's an afterthought. I'm not sure they realized it should have been a thought. So let's just make this real for a second. It's not just leveraging existing processes. Like you are hinting at, it's not always technology, right? Sometimes you can, you know, buy what's the concierge MVP something, right? Like, I might not have a great tool for model registry, model management, or listing things out. So crack open a Word doc, or God forbid, Excel or something, but put a process in place, leverage existing councils and meetings so that you actually do, and just put that in there. Like you mentioned, maybe you just relabel the existing meeting process so that it now feels like it is scoping in these new ideas. Love that advice. I think that's when we look at people adopting the change is really important. And so I think that's a nice insight and suggestion.
And I think that people are comfortable with what they know. It's human behavior. So by hopefully companies that have some level of starting point with their data governance, data management programs, they could start with that as the starting point. And what I'm advocating and encouraging chief data officers and people in the practitioner role of data management, think of what they can do today and expand on that just a little bit in terms of how it can be used for AI use cases, and enhancing your governance processes so it can manage AI models as well. Because an AI model, for me, essentially, is a data product. It's a group of data that is used for a specific purpose in the model that is used that was built for a specific function to deliver a specific business value. And you want to make sure that all these parts of the AI model as a data product is governed, it's protected around controls and policies and data quality rules. And you're monitoring it for drifts or changes over time. And, you know, you want to make sure that you clean the data if you see any changes in the data quality. So it's a collective unification of these data elements together. The only change is now as a data product, the data is spread out all over your organization. Yeah. It's not in one single database. It's probably in multiple databases and data silos. It's across different business domains, perhaps. And you have to virtually govern it as well, maybe through a schema or through some other virtualized layer. So that's what makes it trickier, the fact that all the data that's you need for your product or for your model is just spread out. So you're going to have to leverage more of your technology resources and processes to make sure you have a unified view and control over that.
That's been one of the things that I personally have been the biggest fan over the data product language, is that it's really, if nothing else, even if people forget all sorts of other processes or thinking that goes along with the data product, just by simply naming it data product, it is pushing, I think, more technologists to think about what they work on actually being used, right? Actually being used by the business, used downstream in some capacity. And therefore, it's like, if I have a product, I have a consumer, right? I have somebody that's going to do something with that. So if nothing else, I'm going to take the win that people are lately, that shift left mentality of thinking about how this is going to be used and consumed. And Peggy, so you've already hinted at some of the answers to this, but I'd love the other question on, you know, how can CDOs build and influence the culture of the company to be AI first? And you know, so you hint at, you know, practices and leveraging existing tools and mindsets, you know, but what are some of the other advice that you give, you know, CDOs and you know, even potentially your big ID customers?
Yeah, so education is one of the biggest challenges chief data officers have to do. And they're doing it today in terms of educating people on data literacy. So I don't see it as a far step, additional step for chief data officers to advocate for AI literacy as well. And what I've seen in some organizations is providing the training for not just their technology teams and data teams, but the business stakeholders, your business counterparts. Sometimes they may not be as fluent in terms of, you know, just understanding even basic, you know, database or AI terminologies and capabilities. And to soften, I think, some of the fear that some people may have around AI, you know, I've seen a lot of companies offer individual training or team training just on these basic concepts, so that step one is always level setting, making sure everybody is familiar with the terminologies, you know, the industry usages, and then start to bring in discussions and things like think-a-thons or hackathons on how those capabilities can be aligned internally in terms of business processes. But again, I see the chief data officer is part of their role to evangelize data concepts, to bring together and collaborate across the different teams, and to innovate certainly these new concepts. I really see the chief data officer being that glue and person, that role, the executive role that brings it all together.
And I'll underline that, if you don't mind, with something else you said earlier about business case, right? And like when you look at, you know, teaching, learning, influencing change, you know, always tying it back to the business case for that. The quick point to underline that is a customer that we have where, you know, the tech leader that we're working with, very savvy, and he did a great job presenting to his executive leadership, you know, showing it's like, hey, you had data scientists that were doing these predictive models on where should we invest next, which markets and things like that. And, you know, CEO and president's perception is like, well, we have had these two people doing this for ages. Why is it taking you, you know, they banged out analyses in a month. Why is it taking you 3 months to build like our, you know, this data platform and get our data just to be back to where we felt like we were before? It's like, well, did you see how we can't spend, SEC is not letting us spend any more money right now because we can't analyze fast enough. Did you see how many times we had to restate data because we have no data management? Did you see how many investor letters we had to resend because data had to be restated because it wasn't managed? You're like, oh. And then, you know, even just simply showing the architecture diagrams, like, oh my gosh, that's everything that went into building this? Well, no wonder it took some time. But yes, business use cases, very important. You know, tying that, having the CDO tie those points out for, you know, being that bridge between the technologists and, you know, the business leadership, you know, very critical. So love that point. Love that you led with that. And, you know, it's something that we can't remind people about enough.
I think the thing is, a lot of C-suites, they have a very specific role and function, and sometimes that leads to a bit of myopic view of thinking. So you have the business leads just thinking about running the business, and you have a technology team just thinking about the technology. Having that, again, that cross-functional, holistic view, other than maybe the information officer, I really see the data officer as really the strongest candidate to have all sides and advocating for all sides of the different C-suite areas.
On a completely different conversation, but it would be nice to see that we get over the next couple of years some consensus on what really is the role of a CDO or whatever we end up calling it, right? Because I agree more with your definition, but not everybody does that, right? You might see in some orgs where the CDO reports to the CIO, right? And it's a very technical function. And then there's a very technology bent to it, and less of that bridge builder and that empathetic voice, you know, across the aisle. So
another interesting point, I just wanted to share this, is that some people have actually told me that, you know, the AI officer role, something could be phased out once it's in production. And, you know, I haven't fully formed my opinion on this, whether or not the role of an AI officer is going to be permanent or whether or not that just, again, melts into the role and responsibilities of everyone. I think short term, I think it's really important to identify and give accountability and responsibility to someone named an AI officer, whether it's data and AI or security and AI, whatever. You need to have someone with an AI in the title. And I think we would be in a very mature state if all industries and organizations didn't need that identification anymore. And that just means that everyone is so AI-centric. That will be the point where we know it's already an AI-driven organization and we can drop the title.
Okay, so maybe it's because we both have economics degrees that we had similar thoughts. Just maybe. But I proposed doing a panel discussion, and the very, shall we say, potentially inflammatory kickoff for that would be, should the AI or the chief data officer should be a temporary role? With the thought experiment being, if the chief data officer, if you view it as a temporary role, then the goal is to mature the organization towards a data and decision culture led organization. So then, you know, I have kind of a timeline with like discrete things I'm trying to do in the organization to propel it forward so that this thinking is inculcated, permeated across the entirety of the organization, not just sitting inside, you know, one person or one office and everybody's looking to them. Like it's now all, and it's a, you know, a flywheel that's just going, right? So
I have a block on that.
I don't think
so. A great other panel. And you need a chief financial officer on the panel as well, because, you know, why do we need a CFO? Everyone should be fiscally responsible. And what is the role of a CFO? I know that why there's a role of a CFO, because ultimately you need one person signing off on the audits and the financial statements. So yeah, that's a great conversation. I question as well.
One thing that I observed prior to GPT coming along and, say, this chasm kind of being crossed, is that it was often hard to get IT or the technology side excited about AI, because AI tended to serve business, right? The business had the business case. The models would typically, you know, use data or use assets that were run by technology, but IT never really was served by AI. And so a lot of the IT executives I saw, and not saying all by any, but a good chunk of them just didn't care, right? It wasn't within their portfolio, their wheelhouse. The business cared, but then they couldn't get IT support. And so you kind of had this almost like AI fell through the cracks, if you will, at many orgs that I saw because of that. And so I think the CDO and CAIO office roles, one thing they have that is perhaps distinct from a CIO or a CTO or CFO, is these are inherently much more cross-functional. You know, the CFO will tend to lead an accounting or a financial, you know, group. The CTO will tend to lead a technology group, be it IT, be it, you know, whatever you want to call that. The CIO will tend to lead sort of business-focused functions, whereas these two roles, or the role that mingles, or, you know, whatever limitation thereof, really does sit between, right? You know, these things need technology to function, but without business, they're a cost center, right? There's no value there.
I agree, but I mean, I think any CTO technologist, I mean, AI is a technology tool. They embrace it as well, but I agree to a different level than the data and business officer. They think about it from, yeah, now how do I manage it in my whole suite of architecture tools? They're still in the thick of it. I just think that, yeah, they view it differently, not from a value perspective.
And I think that's why concepts like Dagani's data mesh and other things have been postulated, right? So I come from the tech background, having done all of my tech in the business, right? Like, I learned, cut my teeth on data, not as an IT function, but I was part of an incredibly IT-centric team sponsored by business to drive business insights for, you know, when I was at Dell, call center staffing, you know, customer care, customer service metrics all around the globe. We love to have like areas of concern and areas of control. And so that's why people need to line up to neat boxes. But when we're talking about data, those things don't line up to neat boxes, mm-hmm, right? Like, that people need an inherently a very deep and right now technical function of, hey, if I'm in manufacturing and I need to know order line quality on all these different things that are running through the line, well, that's going to be a combination of the people managing the floor, as well as then the stuff coming off and streaming off the IoT, and then somebody to analyze and look at that, and then somebody who has a knowledge about the engineering process to help the person, or maybe even be the person that looks at that data. So all of these things are very cross-functional. I think that's, you know, again, why we see data mesh concepts and similar things coming up is like, well, it doesn't work for this just to live in one place, right? There needs to be a faster way to have a business case, and then the fulfillment of that business case, i.e., I have a question, can I get the answer so I can make my next decision? So related to that, you were saying a little bit, Peggy, on like, how do we go beyond just use cases? How, you know, what are ways that CDOs help scale both data and AI across all teams and business processes?
So traditionally, I think I've been noticing the last couple of years, chief data officers also work closely with privacy and security officers. I think mm-hmm, prior to AI, those were other, more siloed, I would say, efforts, mm-hmm, but because there's a big component to privacy management, compliance management, what sensitive, confidential information, pertains to different privacy laws that organizations needs to make sure is governed, is deleted properly, reported properly. You know, we've seen privacy teams work closely with data officers to make sure that there is that concept of, you know, you're labeling the data, we're able to control and delete it as needed. We can report mm-hmm on the data subjects as needed by law. So those type of initiatives, again, it's cross-functional because you have the privacy and your legal counsel reinterpreting the law that the company should follow. But, you know, there's completely different data team that, you know, is running the data. So they need to come together and work together on these type of efforts. Similarly, in the security space, and this is something I've learned in the last couple of years, I'm not coming from security, but realizing that from a security perspective, they are also discovering data. They're classifying data, classifying meaning understanding the importance and usage of that data. And if something is of higher confidentiality or it's private, non-public information, it's held to a different regard in terms of how it should be protected. So having different policies and safeguards. And again, security teams look at it more from a, let's lock down the entire system, whereas data people look at it from a more discrete data element, but data element level. So they're more, there's a little bit more minutiae when it comes to data governance coming to that data element level. But it's essentially the same process of discovering and classifying mm-hmm. the data, protecting it, making sure, one, we're not collecting data that we don't need. Again, these are basic privacy mm-hmm. data minimization laws. Security perspective thinks about reducing our attack surface. If we don't need it, let's delete it because it reduces the amount of extraneous data that can potentially be leaked or attacked by external parties. And then when you think about it from a more data and technology point of view, there's cost savings to not keeping more data that's needed, just the infrastructure costs and cloud costs, things like that. And data teams have this data lifecycle management. At the very end of this lifecycle management should be deletion. And organizations, even a lot of the ones I work with today, they have trouble finding the data that needs to be deleted. All organizations have mm-hmm. retention schedules as to how long they should be keeping the data, but there's a risk awareness to keep more data than they should be. So data hoarding is a very common behavior, and it's a human behavior. Because if you look at everyone has a cell phone and they're taking pictures on their cell phone, think about the number of duplicate pictures you take of something, and you just find the right final best version of that photo. You might have 10 copies of a scenery, and you probably only need one. So they're all very similar. So when it comes to amount of data, you can either consolidate it or, you know, just delete all the duplication. Companies are not doing that today. They're not deleting their duplicates. They're not deleting data that has expired. Why are they keeping employee history, employees that left the organization more than 10 years ago? And if their policy clearly says delete all the information and they're still keeping it, why are they keeping it? Is there a legal hold? Is there some kind of extenuating circumstance? If not, it's in their right for organizations to delete and no longer store that information. So the reason why I talk about this a lot, and it's, again, one of our biggest use cases at Big ID, is because large language models are sourced from unstructured data. Unstructured mm-hmm. data is the largest source of the differentiating competitive information that builds the large language models or chatbots for organizations. And if unstructured data is mostly comprised of duplicate data, that leads to a certain bias. If your mm-hmm. unstructured data is comprised mostly of outdated information, it's not current, then what does that mean for the large language model? It's also going to reflect and show a bias towards the old information. So imagine if you build a chatbot that's supposed to read all your technical documentation and you want it to be a great way for all your developers to ask questions. And if that large language model, that chatbot, was built on old documentation, the answers mm-hmm. it's going to provide is not going to be correct as well. So making sure as you're building out the the chatbots and large language models, you're using current, fresh data. This doesn't contain your private sensitive information. You don't want that, you know, potentially leaked out where it shouldn't be. So those are the type of things that I think about every day when engineers are doing their training on their databases, their vector databases can potentially contain biased or, outdated data that should be deleted.
I love that point because we talk a lot about our data being our competitive advantage. But in this case, you're highlighting how it could actually become a disadvantage. Simple example from consulting, if you're a 40-year-old consulting company and you ask it for a data modernization strategy, and the first 30 years of that company were probably all on-prem. So I might get fantastic technical details for the fiber channel SAN that I should build out for a 30 petabyte data lake. And it would be woefully inadequate for what customers actually need right now. Because to your point, it would be not where the present thinking and markets is going.
Exactly. So I think that it was such an easy win for organizations to start building the large language models and just pointing at their existing file shares. But again, this is where if they didn't have that hygiene, that data hygiene in place, those practices to review their unstructured data and have governance on top of it and have data quality monitoring, it's very easy to, if you're not in the field, if you're not a technologist, you would have just accepted those models as being correct. And this is where everyone from privacy to AI activists advocate for human in the loop. That's a very common phrase. Certainly no one is saying humans should not be in the loop, but at the same time, there are certain things that should have been done as proper preparation to ensure that any human intervention and validation should be at a higher level. It shouldn't be the monotonous manual review. And something like that should have been caught much earlier in the chain.
A point, and it's been probably made over several guests, and so I'm not going to try to remember any particular one. But one of the things that I know many traditional data practitioners are loving about Gen AI's moment and what it's doing for the field is it's highlighting everything that you've talked about. It's like, when the data is sitting there, as you point out, in unstructured documents, unstructured text, and everything else, and it hasn't been as easy to use and people haven't used it, there's less of a need. I just need to make sure it's locked away or something like that. I don't really worry too much about my data management policies because I'm not using it. Now, suddenly, when I'm using it, it's highlighting this glaring gap in organizational policies and practices. It's like, oh, we haven't been doing that, and we probably should have been, right? Now that the tools have made it easier to find true fit for use on that data, now they're realizing I didn't manage it. So now there's gold in there, but there's also a ton of other dirt obscuring the gold.
Yeah, so, I agree. And I love it when you have companies like Google at their Google Next conference, one of the last biggest presentations they had was, you know, talking about you can't have AI without data governance. And it's clearly in that title. And I love that fact that now tech companies are now advocating and using the terminology data governance. It's not AI governance. It's the plain old vanilla data governance. And again, as a data governance practitioner by heart and trade, I am loving the moment. It's almost like a validation of all the hard work we've done in the past, and it's actually value to the defensive activities that we've been advocating for, because it wasn't exciting. It wasn't sexy before. We weren't analytics.
No.
We weren't showy, but it's so fundamental. And everyone always forgets the fundamentals. And AI is revealing the fact, all the cracks, if you don't have a good foundation.
It's the Copernicus moment, right? Like we realize the world, people are now believing the world is round.
But there's still people out there, though, that are still pushing for AI without good data quality. They still see the results. When is good enough? there's always going to be that argument. But my counter argument to that is, these are things you, let's not skip the basics. You know it should be done. I'm not saying everything should be 100% perfect before you move on, implement AI, but it needs to be a constant iterative approach and a parallel stream as we release and test out AI technologies. Let's also, at the same time, we can scale faster if we had strong data as well.
If you look at the big AI companies, data is the moat, right? Building these models, you can train a machine learning model in 5 lines of code, right? Building a good model requires the data, the quality, the skill, right? So the building of the model itself, honestly, is not what's going to long-term be the moat. It's going to be the data the company has, that it can get hold of, that it can manage, govern, use well, keep in good quality.
Good point.
Peggy, you are very active on LinkedIn. So there's any previews on, upcoming events or talks or things that you would love to highlight here as we close?
Sure. So I'm very excited about attending IAPP AI Governance in Brussels. It's really the inaugural conference for IAPP, again, which traditionally has been more on privacy, but certainly they've launched the AI governance training and certification. So I'm excited to be attending the first of its kind AI governance. It's going to be a lot of updates around the European Union, the AI Act. I'm hoping there's a good enough U.S. constituency that we can also talk about some of the more U.S.-centric issues as well. But I'm excited. It's going to be a global audience. Privacy, data, hopefully security, and other personas will be well represented. All industries, all sizes of companies will be welcome to attend and participate. I'm really looking forward to this type of conference.
And then, Peggy, you have some other publishing routes, so some other podcasts that you're involved in. Do you want to let our listeners know about those?
Sure. So I'm a podcast host for two podcasts. One is the Better Tech Forum, where I interview AI founders of their companies. And the second one is tied to the association.ai. It's a membership community for AI data privacy and security. And that's where I interview AI book authors to learn more about their book research and just to share and highlight some of their AI research to the audience as well.
And we'll provide links for both of those in our when we post this episode. Peggy, thank you for joining us today. This was a great discussion. Loved all of the points. You definitely left folks that are going to listen to this with lots of salient thoughts to think deeply on.
Thank you, Sid and Lee, for this opportunity. And please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. Love to talk about these topics. Anything about AI, data, privacy, security, but this was a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening and being an advocate of the data culture community. Curiosity intersected with data can inform and inspire change for the betterment of all. Let's build cultures to make this happen. If you have a topic, want to be a guest or chat, reach out to me, Sid Atkinson, or my co-host Lee Harper on LinkedIn via DM or via the Data Culture Podcast LinkedIn group. If you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, please do so anywhere you get podcasts. Be sure to join our LinkedIn group to engage with your fellow data culture changemakers and visionaries. Thanks again for listening.